But this is all a very, very, very mental game. Women have given birth in comas, like completely unconscious. Their bodies do the whole thing. We don't actually have to think about it at all. Experiencing birth and getting through it and just getting out of the way is the mental part. Your body is doing it, whether you don't get to say like, okay, now it's time for another contraction. You don't have any control over that.
My job is to literally manage myself and my experience and my reaction to that process happening.
Preparation does not mean control. Welcome back to Healthy as a Mother. I am your co-host, Dr. Morgan, and this is the show for becoming and being a mother, where Dr. Leah and I share the natural women's health and motherhood guidance that you've been looking for through our fresh, functional, and balanced lens. And today is a sit back, take it in, take some notes, soak it up, maybe listen to this multiple times during your pregnancy as you prepare for birth, because we go into a lot of depth about what does a birth mindset actually mean and look like, and how do we give ourselves the very best situation and experience in deep, deep, deep understanding and belief of the way that the birth system goes, the way that we can put our birth goddess in charge of driving the bus. Yes, that's a very long analogy that we we made up that is strewn throughout the episode. I think you're going to enjoy it. You know, we have a good time with this one. We're laughing, we're making it funny, but then it also hits on so many points about women, mothers, rites of passage, living, being humans in this life, and this huge spiritual aspect of humanity that I think we're missing in our culture if we don't intentionally put it there. So let's go ahead and dive in.
All right, here we are once again at the School of Healthy as a Mother, the Healthy as a Mother School. Dr. Morgan is going to lead us through a beautiful episode today around birth mindset, which I feel is incredibly important and not really talked about in the conventional model especially, which is sort of like everything that we share on this podcast. But I know that athletes, I think it's nice, and you might relay this back during the episode, but I feel like people, it's very accepted in the athletic world that they know how much mindset impacts performance. Mm-hmm. And it's not wooey. And even people who would never be in any sort of like wooey world are like, oh yeah, like mindset is everything. Get your head in the game. You know, like everybody understands that. But then when it comes to birth, it's sort of like, wait, what? Like that's a part of it. And it's probably one of the major parts of it. So why don't you take it away and tell us all of your wisdom and knowledge on this topic?
I'm glad you mentioned the athletes, because we will talk about that in a little bit. Mm-hmm. And just kind of the cultural lack of mental preparation around this. So I was talking about this with some midwives lately or recently that were saying, we were talking about postpartum care, and they were saying that people who, because they were midwives, they were working in a birth center or they were doing home births. And so, you know, they're working with unmedicated clients, and they were saying a lot of the time they find that people spend so much time preparing for the birth that they don't spend any time on the postpartum. And so we were talking about how to bridge that gap and whatever. And I remember that for my own self, spending so much time on the birth because I was planning a home birth, and then, you know, didn't spend any time on postpartum, and boom, that was like, it was out the window for me for postpartum. Yeah. But so only like some women will spend that much time preparing for the birth. And sometimes too, it's like other angles, or there's maybe not as much about mindset. It's more about like, what am I going to physically do? Like the different positions and the breath work and things. And that's all so important. But this episode, I really want to talk about the way that we can wrap our mind around things and how important that is, because it is so mental. Like, mm-hmm. I'm going to talk about birth as a general, what's most common to happen. Obviously, as we know, and we try to make room for and space for all the time on this podcast, there are lots of different ways that birth can go. And so if you're thinking of a scenario that is outside of the realm of like the majority, which would just be like an uncomplicated vaginal birth of a low risk woman of one baby, you know, all of those kinds of things, that is the vast majority of births. Mm-hmm. Twins, breech, like true failure to progress or like stall, the need for an emergency cesarean, something happening like cord prolapse or uterine rupture or some kind of major complication. I'm not really talking about those situations. And even if we still, when we're preparing our mindset, you don't know if those things are going to happen, and your mindset, you can still go there. So we're going to talk about like trauma prevention and all sorts of stuff. So, okay.
Right.
There is so much that I think American women are not willing to, even aware of. It's like, you don't know what you don't know. They're not even aware of the fact that our culture is really anti-natural birth, just inherently. Mm-hmm. In all the ways that it's portrayed in media, birth is like, it's like something to be feared. It's something super crazy. You think about all the scenes on Grey's Anatomy and Knocked Up and any birth friends, any birth scene ever on a show or a movie is crazy town. Like Bridgerton, you know, they're not like moving through it and stuff. And it's okay too to make vocalizations, but it's a little scary out of context when you're just watching that and they look like they're having the worst time of their entire lives. And there's zero mainstream women talking about how much they loved their birth or how empowering it was, or even if it was challenging and hard, they got through and whatever. And so we have such a lopsided little girl subconscious that has been socialized with us where we just like grow up thinking this thing is going to be really crazy and terrible, but like, oh, I want children, like the drive for children still supersedes it. And so they're like, well, I guess I'll get through. Thank God for epidurals. And that's maybe their main plan. And you know, we talk about epidurals in that episode, so we'll link that in the show notes and be sure to listen back to that, because I don't think it's a great plan A, and I explain why. Even if it is your plan A.5, that's fine, but we should always have a little bit of perspective around the fact that like sometimes they don't work or you don't have the option or the anesthesiologist is busy, you know? Yeah. So anyways, we need to be able to have gone in our pregnancy, you get these 9 to 10 gracious months to have thought about this. Maybe you've thought about it beforehand too, but this is all a very, very, very mental game. Mm-hmm. What's happening to your body is in most regards a natural, spontaneous, physiological event that is supposed to happen. Otherwise, we would not be here. There would be no humans on this planet. Okay. We are all mammals. We give birth vaginally. We nurse our babies with our mammary glands, our breasts, just like a cow, a dog, a donkey, a lion, a monkey.
Give them to us. Tell us all the mammals, Morgan. the platypus that actually lays eggs but still has mammary glands.
Yeah, what in the world is that all about?
Gosh, genetic experimentation, it must be.
There has to be I don't know what on earth happened there. But you know, these animals are not thinking about issues that they're having. I do want to know, and I've tried to look this up, and it's very difficult because, you know, they just often don't even really know. But what is the rate of spontaneous labor complications in wild animals? Like, I know cows and our domesticated livestock can have problems, and I think a lot of that has to do with selective breeding and what, you know, you artificially inseminated this kind of cow with like a humongous type of calf that's going to not be able to come out, and then there's problems. But I think like we have to remember the overall rate of that happening where there's a complication is low. So this cannot be something that's like scary. And we also in this particular American culture have like a really big fear of pain. Mm-hmm. We don't want to do any hard work. We want everything to be handed to us, non-complicated. We want to just take everybody's just popping ibuprofen or Tylenol for any little twitch. Mm-hmm. They don't want to figure out other ways to deal with it. They don't want to just like push through it.
Or see the value in pain and see the value in struggle, that like that is valuable just like a degree at a school or just like anything else. Like, it brings value. It's not just shitty, you know,
Only in certain examples is pain and difficulty okay. And I'm going to lay them out for you. Only in the certain examples, like running and training for a marathon or Ironman or some big like athletic event or CrossFit or something like that, you know, where we really boxing, jujitsu, not jujitsu, but like MMA, stuff like that. We're all like, wow, this is just like a super athlete. Look at all the things that they've been through. Yeah. And they trained so much and it was certainly very painful. And, you know, they get knocked unconscious, they break a bunch of bones, they like whatever. And we glorified it and we go and we circle around the ring and we're like cheering for them. And it's so cool. And wow, you ran that marathon and that must have really sucked, but like you trained for it for so long and that's so cool. But there is no rite of passage culture with like us becoming, adults from little children into adults, whether that's like, the quinceañera and stuff like that in the Mexican culture. It's like 13. Okay, they kind of pick this arbitrary number. In a lot of other indigenous cultures, it's like 9 for boys, girls more when they get their menstrual cycle. So in those situations, it's like the walkabout, the Australian walkabout. Like they go and they are out in the wilderness, like by themselves, and they have this hard thing they work through, and then they come out on the top, and it's the hero's journey. Like our kids' school is all about, because it's an acting school, it's because it's all about like working through this hero's journey and the beauty in that and how
Yeah.
cool that can be. And it's like, why do we not care about that? I don't
I know, there's like
understand.
no reverence for it. And even in the fertility space, this is really hard to say to someone in the thick of it. And I get that because I've been there. But in many ways, or anybody's healing journey, how could we change it to be like, okay, you're going through something really hard and this really sucks, but then like, could there also be a beautiful journey or healing in that where you become a different version of yourself because of that struggle and that pain? And I think birth is such a pivotal moment in that. Then it happens to so many women, yet it is just not revered. Like revered, I don't know if that's the word. Like there's no reverence for it of
Revered, revered.
revered.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, I mean, I was raised Catholic. I feel like there was like more attention put into like getting your first communion than like your birth. And I'm just like, this is crazy. This should be such a big part of, wow, you were this person and now you're this completely different person and you went through this hard thing and like what beautiful lessons did you learn? And like we should almost like have a debrief with women about, like, wow, like you did this amazing thing and like you're a new person and let's like talk about that, share
Yeah,
about it.
you literally transformed. There's no closer example for a human to the butterfly cycle of metamorphosis than birth.
Yeah.
Like, that is it. Yes, puberty is a big thing, but puberty takes like years. Okay, it's a big, long, slow transformation. Metamorphosis for a butterfly is such an insane thing. If you guys have never ordered one of those kits from Amazon and grown from the caterpillar to the chrysalis to the butterfly at your house, do it with your kids. It's like $30. It's so fun. It's magical. It's amazing. It's so weird. And then you watch the YouTube videos where it's showing like a graphic of their body completely breaking down into this like liquid soup, and then the cells knowing what to do to reform into a butterfly. It is the craziest thing.
I know. That is
Everyone just
crazy.
accepts it as normal. They're like, oh yeah, caterpillars just become butterflies. It's like, wait a minute. If you were just trying to explain that to like an alien or something,
Yeah.
like, what?
That is an alien. That's crazy.
It's crazy. And I know a lot of insects have weird things where they go from like a pupa to like a wasp or something. And it's bizarre. Okay, but anyways, there is inherent value, like you're saying, in pain, challenge, struggle. And oftentimes people come out of those things a much better version of themselves, with insights that they can like have such a lasting impression on other people, and they can make an impact in the society and whatever. And now with birth, because it is such a routine thing, it's like if you want children, your wife is giving birth in some way. Okay, or the woman is giving birth somehow, like either vaginally or via cesarean, but the baby is coming out of her body. Okay. Or, you have a surrogate, but I'm just talking about like, and then, again, I'm not going to make comments on every side experience that there can be. So just like know that I understand that there's different ways that things happen. Okay. And so it's a little bit more normalized to be not as like cool as somebody climbing Mount Everest, but it really should be like, wow. You are going into this thing, and this is the Native American blessing way. A blessing way is a ceremony that's more about the woman. So, like, baby showers in American culture, always around like consumption, consumerism, and you do need some things for a baby. It's very nice to get the gifts from people and not have to all buy it yourself. But a blessing way is a different vibe, and it's about the woman and giving her reverence and pumping her up and celebrating her and recognizing in real time for her and for all of the people around her, the closest people around her, this transformative chapter that's about to change, and really calling it out and being like, you are literally going to be different after this. Not only because you have now another baby or a baby for the first time, but because you went through this thing, and there will be lessons that maybe aren't immediately on the surface apparent to you. But you can't go through it unscathed. Like, you can't go through it without having some impact, whether that impact and lasting effect is I am an absolute badass goddess, or wow, I really did not think I could do that. And then I just did, and I don't know how I did, but like that's kind of crazy. And I'm sort of shocked and surprised, or gone through, some other, maybe it's like a more difficult, it's like a traumatic kind of thing. And that, we never want that to happen. It does happen. And I still think at the end of that, we could still extrapolate out some silver lining or benefit. It's not like you need to do that right away, because you do need to like process and feel your feels, especially, some things are very unfair, not okay, totally not your fault, like just because of the system or because of somebody made a human error mistake, whatever it is. Okay, but so what's happening to you physiologically is a normal thing. And if we can also, like, when we're raising our little girls and we're talking about, and our boys, and we're talking about birth, talk about it in a way that is just like so normal. Like, you go pee and poop in the toilet. Sometimes you get sick, and then your body does this crazy thing called vomiting, and it gets it out, and it's like really purposeful, and it sucks to go through, but like it has a purpose, and our bodies are meant to do this. And like, yeah, with labor, this is how it's going to happen. And you start to have these contractions, and they get more and more and more intense, and then everything opens up, and then your body pushes down, and the baby comes out. Okay. Women have given birth in comas, like completely unconscious. Their bodies do the whole thing.
It's
It
crazy.
is, we don't actually have to think about it at all.
It's actually
So it's
better
like,
not to, right?
yes, it's actually better not to. So it's like, well, what do you mean birth is mental? It's like, okay, well, let me distinguish. Experiencing birth and getting through it and just getting out of the way is the mental part. Your body is doing it, whether you don't get to say, like, okay, now it's time for another contraction. You don't have any control over that. That's not a thing. But if you can just sit back like a passenger in a movie, or a like a viewer of a movie, and just allow it to be, that is better in a lot of ways, because you are out of your monkey mind. You are out of your cerebral prefrontal cortex that makes us human, that can get stressed out, that can cause pulses of adrenaline and cortisol that do directly interfere with birth hormones. So there's a couple of base level things that I wish everybody knew before talking about this episode, which I'm not going to talk about right now, but like it is really important, I think, also for a lot of people to understand the why behind things. So when you understand the why of birth hormones and the cascade and what's happening, you understand why being stressed and scared is vitally important to avoid, and to be feeling safe and secure are your like top goals.
Okay, can
Okay.
I interrupt before you go into that?
Yes.
Okay, first of all, I have one thing to say. Labor Like a Goddess is a wonderful book. If anyone like wants a book, have you read it? Did you read Labor Like a Goddess?
No, I haven't. I really need to.
Oh my God. Okay. It's like this too. It's so good. You know, like the girl, she has to go into the underworld to have her to get her baby, and she has to give up all of these things, like clothes on her back and all this stuff, and she gets, I don't know, it's just so good. And there's this like one scene where you're like walking down this spiral staircase of broken glass and you have no idea when it ends and you have to just keep going. And I don't know, it was really good to prepare you for the mental part of labor. So I recommend that for anybody. The other thing, when you were talking about that, you know how I think in analogies. And so if anyone's seen
Yes.
Inside Out, which is a wonderful movie as well, about all the different parts of ourselves and our psyche, the second one has anxiety. Like the new emotion comes in, anxiety. And like you said in the bus, just for people to have this visual while you go through these things, it's as if temporarily there's this new entity that has, like, you have been driving the bus, right? Like, you are driving the bus of your life, especially women who are more controlling and want to control just like most things, high achieving women, people like us, you know, that like we get what we want and like things happen. But then all of a sudden, there's this thing that comes onto the bus and it's like the birth being, I don't even know, like just imagine like another part of yourself, but it's kind of separate from who you are on a day-to-day basis, and comes and is like, oh, okay, I'm gonna drive the bus now. And it's like your level of surrender and acceptance to let that birth being take over the bus is like sort of your experience of your suffering, because they're gonna be driving the bus. It's whether you start having panic attacks, whether you are like, no, like crawling back to like get to the bus, like steering wheel. It's like, no, I do it. No, I, this is me. This is my life. Like you can't take over. And in my experience of the women who have the best experiences, it is that they have practiced and or are better equipped to hand the reins over to the bus being to be like, I understand you are now driving the bus And my job is to literally manage myself and my experience and my reaction to that process happening. And there are so many things you can do. And there's similar like threads with fertility. You know how we like are both in our own little worlds of infertility. It's like there's stuff that you do and like that controlling piece and part of women. It's the ones that suffer the most through that journey of like, I must control it all. And like, there are things that you have to do. And same with birth. Like you still have to like get up and like move around. It's not like you're in a coma and you don't know what's going on. You still have to coexist with them. You still have to coexist with this other thing that is now taking over. But how you interact with that thing and release and control and surrender to that process that is not in your control, even if you think it is where the difference of that is where the suffering either is or isn't, in my experience and opinion.
I love that because that's so, it's so true. This, we've always had this inherent part of ourselves. We just never get to see her until we're giving birth. It's literally like the birth emotion thing, but it's not an emotion. It's like some very spiritual, like whether you're religious or not, I think it's, you can understand that there is like a magic happening when a baby is coming into the world that was not there before or that was behind skin. Like, I guess they are there, but like, they're not ready to be out yet. And so there's a very transitory, well, like, well, when could they, when are they viable? When are they like a real person? To me, it's like, yeah, it's a real person in my body right now, 21 weeks, but it would never live on the outside. Like, no, it's not a real like human that could live out here. So there is some kind of transition. And when a baby is coming into the world, whether you want to think about it spiritually or not, there's this aspect of you that has always lived within you that is, as women, we have this inherent power and ability that makes us unique, where we're the life bringers, you know? And it's like, I want to think about it almost as one collective entity that is like the same that exists in all of women in all of the entire world, like one human, one thing that comes
in. It's your woman essence. It's your woman essence.
And as we're talking about birth and postpartum support, I want to share an underrated tip with you. That tip is to continue taking your prenatal. Pregnancy and postpartum are the most nutritionally demanding phases of a woman's life. Many women stop taking their prenatal after birth, but we recommend taking it for at least the first 9 months postpartum or the entirety of the time that you're breastfeeding. My favorite prenatal is Needed's Prenatal Multi, and it's the most robust formula that I've seen in the market. It contains bioavailable nutrients in their evidence-based dosages, well above the bare minimum that a lot of prenatals settle for. Their quality standards are top tier with transparent third-party testing, and over 10,000 practitioners now recommending the brand. And now we have the results from their IRB-approved clinical study that confirm the results of what we've been seeing clinically. Women who take the prenatal multi have significantly higher blood levels of critical nutrients for pregnancy and postpartum. This includes vitamin D, B6, B12, riboflavin, vitamin K2. Only women in the Needed group reach the adequate, sufficient levels of vitamin D. Vitamin D plays a big role in your immune health, your mood, and your energy production, all things that are really important during your postpartum season. And while there's many different ways that you can support yourself postpartum, continuing to take your prenatal is a really simple, easy way to cover all your bases. It's one of the most impactful habits that we can have, and Needed makes it easy. Learn more about the study at thisisneeded.com/thrive and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20% off your first order. Yes, healthy mother, like a little affirmation for yourself. It drops into us and we get to be like controlled and run by her. Mm-hmm. And it's an inherent thing that we all have if we just we surrender to her and we let her just sort of take over and drive the bus. And it all works out much better if we let her drive the bus. But I do recognize the huge paradox, which some people are going to be catching right now and be so frustrated with me, which is, Morgan, you say all the time that you need to be really prepared for birth. You need to be involved in your birth plan. You can't just be a passive participant. Well, how the hell do we do that when you're telling me to let my subconscious drive the bus? Okay, well, listen, there is this like, you know, preparation versus surrender paradox. Okay. Yeah. You need to still in your brain have knowledge and understand the base level of why things occur. And of course, there will be women who knew nothing about birth, teenagers, people in indigenous cultures who for some reason didn't hear anything about it. I don't know. People in American culture who for some reason didn't hear anything about it. And they still had like a really fast, uncomplicated, crazy birth. Their bodies just took over. Everything was like, boom, whatever. That's going to happen. Yes. But for the vast majority of people, it's because of our maternity system, which does not serve women and physiological birth, it gets babies out and it's about numbers and it's sort of like mass production, which, again, it's not like people who run hospitals are evil and they're sitting behind a board meeting and they're like, wahaha, I can't wait to like screw with as many people as possible. That's not what's happening. But it's kind of like the same thing as public health. Mm-hmm. It's like they're looking at these big, vast numbers. They're not looking at the individual experience of mothers and babies.
Yeah.
Midwives do that better. Not all midwives, but most midwives, they do that better. And when you have the individual care, and you have your same practitioner, whatever. So, but within the maternity system of this world, like, unfortunately, everything's going to go better for you if you are educated so that you can say no to things that okay. are going to inherently be coming your way.
I'm sorry. I keep interrupting you. I know you have a flow, but I just have things that come to me that I have to share.
No, go.
Okay, this is how I imagine it. We're in the bus, right? You're like, I'm driving the bus. All of a sudden, this like birth being, this like entity goddess woman is like, okay, I'm here. I'm here to take over. And again, you have to have this relationship with her to say like, okay, I trust you and I surrender. But then what your job almost turns into is a warrior of I am now protecting you from all of the outside influences trying to take away your ability to drive this bus. So it's like you divide yourself into like 10 different warriors and there's like things being thrown at the bus and then there's like cones and you have to get out and move the cone and then there's, you know, like rain coming down and like there's all of these things and those things are stress, things and interventions in the hospital, you know, not being connected to whatever's going on, like, you know, all of the fear and all of the things that you have to navigate. And so if you don't know the things that could come and try to derail this woman driving your bus, then it might really interfere with her ability to drive the bus. So it's not that you are controlling her driving the bus. Your job now needs to be to protect her from driving the bus. And that's where the knowledge comes in. Like the biggest fear of just being in your stressed state, right? Like that inherently is like throwing a knife at the tire of the bus. It's like you need to make sure that that doesn't happen and do as much as you can to prepare like a warrior would to be like, okay, these are all the potential threats that are coming. Not that you inherently feel threatened in the birth. It's like in a loving warrior way of like, there's this beautiful being that's coming to drive my bus and it's my job to like protect her and to keep her doing her job. I have surrendered myself to her to drive the bus and now I need to just like deflect and protect to make sure all is safe. Like you would to a baby. Like, you know, you put your baby out in a park in the middle of, you know, the day. It's like you need to make sure the dog doesn't come and like try to bite her face and like you need to make sure she doesn't get sunburned and you need to make sure she's warm and covered with a blanket. It's like a nurturing way of protection. But that's how I see it is if you didn't prepare or know, it's as if you were a warrior going into a battle and you have no idea what could be coming at you and you have no tools to protect this woman who is now driving the bus, the birth bus, you know? Does that make sense?
Okay. Exactly. Yes. No, I know exactly what you mean. And to take the analogy one step further.
Let's keep going. We need to make a children's movie series.
I know.
This is the episode of Driving the Bus, the birth bus.
It's as if you're in like the Peruvian rainforest and you're on like an excursion, a guided excursion with a you know, group or something. And you are allowing your birth goddess to drive the bus now, but you knew that we were going to have to watch out for like the sharp rocks on the side. Mm-hmm. We were going to have to make sure that there was the windows were up so that like the jaguars didn't climb inside and like whatever. And totally. It's a little bit different than if you chose to drive on a paved road in Kansas or something where there's just not that much going on. You know that you don't need to prep for as many sort of like the barrage of things happening. The analogy mm-hmm. here is that like driving through the jungle with with threats around every corner is sort of like giving birth in the hospital sometimes. And driving on a paved road would maybe be like a loving midwife situation where they're just gonna like watch you and there's just not as many like meddling things involved. They're not gonna meddle with you as much.
Yep.
Okay, but I will say too, it's like the other people on your bus are like your partner and your doula, and they are really the ones that are gonna jump out and move the rock and roll up the windows. They're gonna do those things for you, but they needed to know that that was part of their instructions, that that was something that we were all cohesively on the same plan. We had a family meeting. We talked about this. We were like, when the rock is in the way, you're going to jump out and do this. When this happens, you're going to do that. When I start to really not trust the labor goddess woman driving the bus, and I start to panic and I want to take over and I want to sit in her seat again, you're going to like rub my back and you're going to tell me that it's okay. And you're going to remind me of things I do truly believe in my deep subconscious, that everything is actually totally fine and that we're having a beautiful, wonderful jungle excursion, or we're enjoying the boring Kansas plains of flatness. Okay. Yes, exactly. And so this is where I should coin this topic. So none of you take it from me, please. Because I did truly make up this up. Like, I made this up. I remember when I was either pregnant with Savia or she was born, because we lived in that house. And it's the idea of a spiritual epidural. So a spiritual epidural to me is like all of these people and supports around you who are protecting you. They're protecting your space. They're protecting the bus. They're making sure that the labor goddess lady can just do her thing, which is an inherent part of you as a woman. Mm-hmm. And you can do this. You can do it. You were born for it, or born with, like, whatever, you know, we have to have that mindset. Whether or not things actually change in the birth is the intersection of our preparation and our planning with reality. Yes. And I am not naive to the fact that things happen. I am not the free birth podcast people who are going to act like there's nothing that can ever bad happen in birth and that you know, whatever. I mean, I know that they backtrack. They say that they don't say that. And it's like, okay, you definitely made it sound like there's nothing, you know, or that these things that could go wrong are just like so infinitesimally rare that you never need to worry about them. And it's just like, okay, well, you can still be really empowered in your free birth and choose free birth. And also know and just not be afraid, but still know that there's risks. Like, I know giving birth at home, there is risk a little bit to some way. If something super crazy happened, maybe the chances of a bigger negative outcome would be higher. But also, things happen in the hospital all the time. Nobody just talks about them. Okay. Like, nobody talks about the deaths that are happening to babies in the hospital. But if it happens at home, it's just like with a naturopathic doctor. It's like, if we mess up and we make a mistake, we are infinitely accused and persecuted. But like MDs, you know, it's just like whoever's not the mainstream is going to get absolutely barraged in every way. Yep. Okay. But so do we see how preparation does not mean control? So you are going to prepare your team and yourself and your subconscious and your brain, and you're going to say, when it's happening, when the labor is actually happening, hopefully my team can take control for me. But also, if I need to pop out of my like labor land and say, no, I don't want to be induced, you can manage that. Okay. Like, you can say something, no, give me 30 more minutes. Give me another hour. No, I don't want to be checked. No, I'm getting in the water now. Mm-hmm. No, I don't want to do that or whatever. Okay. Yeah. You can still make some choices. It's not like you have to just act like you're not there. Mm-hmm. You can still be there, but ideally it's not going to stress you out anymore. It's not like you have to feel that you're taking the bus back over and you're driving this whole thing and you're in a resentful sort of like, you know what? Screw you guys. Like, I knew I just had to do this myself. Mm-hmm. Like, blah, blah, blah. It's more like, oh, I just need to pop out really quick and then I'm going to let her take back over. And when we say her, we're talking about like the cascade of hormones and the spiritual side of things. And truly, when you're in labor, you're in a different brainwave state. Mm-hmm. I can't remember. I'm not going to be able to say are you in more in alpha or beta or omega, like, you know, whatever it is.
Theta, but.
Or theta. Yeah. There's some totally different measurable brainwave state that is different for a laboring woman. So she is literally not in the same reality as the other people in the room.
Yes.
So when there is like breaches of understanding and communication and you're trying to talk to her and her eyes are rolled in the back of her head and she's not making any sense or she's not acting like herself. Yeah, she's not herself. She's not even here. She's halfway between here and the cosmos, pulling her babies down into the earth. Okay. Mm-hmm. Let her be. Leave her alone. Like, let her just do it, you know, and like, let the spiritual goddess lady drive the bus. And just have it like be. And this is where I say, you know, with first time moms too, I feel like it's so exciting when you start to have contractions and you go into labor that you usually kind of want to like walk around, especially if it happens in the middle of the night. This is the worst. And I'm still guilty. But you guys, if you can take one piece of advice from me, you start to have contractions. I don't care if it's 9 o'clock at night and you're like, oh my gosh, something is happening. You don't say, oh, I'm going to like walk the stairs now. I'm going to do the mile circuit. I'm going to squat. I'm going to do something. It's like, no, you eat and you go to bed. You get in your bed and you put a bunch of pillows between your legs and you just rock out those early labor contractions until you literally cannot anymore. You have to get up and move through them because they're so intense. Okay. Mm-hmm. It's very common for first time moms to exhaust themselves in the early labor because it's so exciting. I get it. But we have to just say, no, I'm going to rest and I'm going to let my brain and body just like slip into this labor land thing progressively, naturally. It's a spectrum. Sometimes it does happen really fast, but typically, at least first time, it's not fast. It's a very slow, like chugging along. My analogy is like, you know, those balls that hang from the string, those metal balls, there's like eight of them in a row and they like click back and forth when you like let one of them go and they're like, what are they called?
Like pendulum.
I think they're called like Newton balls or something like that. I don't know. A pendulum. It's like a pendulum thingy. Yeah. But anyway, early labor is like when you take them and you like take like three on one side or two, and then you kind of like let them and they all go crazy. And they're all just like, like they're not in a pattern. But then after like a minute, they start to find some, it might be three on this side and then two on this side. And then it switches two on that side and then three on this side or whatever it is. It's so cool. Those things are so much fun to play with.
Yeah.
We have one here that was my brother's when he was a child and I played with it all the time. And now I have it. Chaz, you're not getting it back from me. So don't ask. It's mine now. But that is like the at some point those contractions will organize into a very predictable pattern and you're on the bus and you're not getting off the bus until the baby comes out.
Yep.
Okay. Yep. Certain things can stop the bus and it can stop the bus for a little while or it can slow the bus down and we don't want these things to happen. Ideally, we want the bus to be able to just continue on its path, continue to do what it needs to do. And it sort of gets faster and faster and faster until it like explodes like a rocket ship. And there's your baby at the end.
And you're going to the moon and it's great.
Exactly. And at the end of the fiery storm is this, oh my gosh, why are my dogs down there? Oh, sorry. Okay. My nanny is on a walk. Okay. We don't need to cut that out. That's fine. I just was like, they're not normally down there. Anyway, at the end of it is like, there's your baby. Okay. So that though takes some time for that to happen. And the easiest, fastest way for your contractions to organize into something real in active labor is just time, resting, and surrendering, process of surrender. And so for the women who are very heady, control, the sort of sometimes, they're the high achieving, they're the CEOs, the entrepreneurs, the really work involved women who have had the experience over and over again of, when I just put in more hard work, I get what I want and I climb the ladder and I get the things and it's all up to me. It's all just like my behavior is going to dictate the outcome of this thing. When we've had 30 years of experiences like that, if I just work harder, I get the straight A's. And when it comes to birth, those are the women that have the hardest time with birth. The athletes and the perfectionists with physical performance sometimes too. And it's just kind of a fact sometimes. And if you're one of those people who had a great birth, and again, I'm not really talking to you, like, cool. Okay. But typically, yes, those women have a harder time. Those who are a little bit more like yin inherently in their feminine type B people who just... are like at the flow and the whim of life more and a little bit chill and not as caring and not as controlling and not as perfectionist tend to have an easier time surrendering to anything in life and birth being one of them.
Yeah. It's the feminine energy. I mean, masculine and feminine is so involved in fertility and in birth and in sex. They're like all so important. It's that feminine energy and the masculine is the control that I can do this. I'm going to plan this. I'm going to do all this stuff. And so that I think is the hardest thing for people to understand is, okay, but I do have to know this stuff. I have to plan. I have to do these things, which is inherently masculine. So you gather the nuts, you like go out and do it, and then you just surrender it all, which is the feminine. And I don't feel like women in our culture have a lot of practice oscillating between the two. You know, either you're inherently just feminine and you haven't really, like, you're maybe a stay-at-home mom from the very beginning. You started having babies. I'm thinking of one of our friends, like, early, and like, you're just a very feminine essence person. And so that really wouldn't, like, you would listen to this and be like, I don't really get what you're talking about. Or you're very, very masculine. And it's, there's not a lot of practice of oscillating back and forth between the two. But the process of conceiving, at least in this current day and age, sadly, for many women, and in having birth, is like, you kind of have to have both. you have to have this masculine knowledge and knowing, and then you have to surrender into your feminine. And when are women learning how to do that? They don't even know that that's a thing to even know how to do it. So are there things that women can do to help them to practice this, like even beforehand?
Electrolytes are trending, yes, but they have been in need of our human bodies for all of time. And if you're drinking another popular and delicious salty electrolyte, here's why you should be drinking Relight instead. First of all, have you ever considered the salt source of these other brands? Because most of them just use table salt. Yeah, table salt. You don't want that. Redmond's Relight Powders uses their unrefined ancient sea salt that they mine in Utah. This salt source contains 60 plus trace minerals along with calcium, chloride, potassium, and magnesium in two different forms, glycinate and malate. The minerals that they use in the Relight Powders are all in the appropriate proportions and forms too. The metabolic needs of pregnancy, healing postpartum, and milk making require more minerals than in other times of your life. Pregnancy itself demands huge increases in your blood volume, which takes, you know, more minerals. Relight is the perfect blend to be sipping during your pregnancy or during your labor even, and especially while you're breastfeeding. It tastes amazing, and my favorite flavors oscillate between mixed berry, lemon lime, and the strawberry lemonade. But you can try a sample pack and try all the flavors for yourself and see what you think. Use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 15% on your entire Redmond order. That includes their OG sea salt, other seasonings, bentonite clays, toothpaste, and more. Yes, yes, there is. And I will say, and I'll get to that in just a second, I will also say women who've had experience with psychedelic drugs, I think also have an easier time with birth because there is a lot of parallels. Mm-hmm. And without going into too much detail, I'm one of those women. And there's an aspect of taking something and knowing that your mind is going to be altered and having ultimate trust that everything's going to be okay. Mm-hmm. Yes, I know there's a chance it could not be okay. I get it. But we're not talking about that. Most of the time, it's going to be fine. Mm-hmm. And you are putting a huge amount of trust in the experience and your brain and just going, okay, let's see it. You know, some people get that through like bungee jumping and they're like, mm-hmm. and that's something to me I would absolutely never do. I have skydived, but skydiving is really different because you immediately hit wind resistance. So you don't have a feeling of falling the entire time. I expect it to, and you don't. You really only feel like you're falling for the first like 30 feet out of the airplane, and then you hit wind, and then you're just like on a windy pillow and just like looking around, but you do not feel like you're falling. It's so weird.
Yeah.
But a bungee jumping or like free base jumping and stuff, you would just feel that the entire time. There wouldn't be enough distance and stuff I don't know. That would be so scary to me. But anyways,
well,
psychedelic drugs though have this.
Can I just say something? Like even with psychedelics, I think the fact that it doesn't always go well all the time is what makes it parallel to birth. Because it's not like there's 100% guarantee, oh, every time you do a psychedelic, nothing bad will ever happen. There is that fear. And that is very real. Just like in birth, like, yes, most of the time, everything goes well. But the people that wig out about birth is because of all the stories that everyone insists on telling them about when it doesn't go well. And so it is a very interesting practice. Not to say that we condone everyone to go do psychedelics before having birth, but it is an interesting practice of like you are choosing to step into this unknown that has very real consequences and fear. Like that's a real thing. You're not just having fear irrationally for no reason. Like there are reasons why you would be afraid of that. And also birth is the same. Like it is inherently natural. It is okay. You are in this altered state and sometimes bad things really do happen. So the people who wig out, it's not because they're just making up some irrational fear that has never happened. And then you have to go in there anyway. Like that's the hard part. It's like you have to go there anyway. And that.
Yeah. There is no way. It's like the I'm going on a bear hunt book. And they're like, oh, yes. Like the only way is through.
Yes.
And it's like, yeah, there's no way. I mean, even, you know, some people will be like, oh, well, like a surgery, like, well, a C-section, you don't have to go through that. And it's like, hello, a C-section is no like.
I thought I was going to die. I literally made peace with the fact that like I might not wake up from my C-section. I might not be able to meet my child. Like that, the fear, because my anesthesia was like really intense and I couldn't breathe. And I was like in this operating room and I was just like, oh my God, I'm going to die from this anesthesia. They gave me too much. They overdosed me because I knew my IVF doctor has told me multiple times. He's like, you don't respond very well to anesthesia. It takes a really long time for you to wake up. And I'm like, cool. And then I've had to have these like two intense experiences that I didn't want. And I'm like, I'm going to die. I'm going to die right here.
Oh.
And I had to calm myself down like through this process. So it was different than like going through a vaginal birth, but it's still like bringing life into the world is intense, but in a beautiful way, but it also has intensity.
Yeah. It's like God or who, you know, whatever made the universe was like, this is going to be known as a humongous deal no matter how it happens.
Yes.
And I think it should. What if it wasn't a big deal? What if it yeah. wasn't something that was transformative and amazing? And even in the most smooth, easy birth where like it's just, it's almost like nothing, it's still like you did this insane thing. A baby came out of you somehow. And that is nuts. Like you made a human that was not here and then now they're here. And so, you know what I mean? Anyways, so, and yeah, like with the psychedelics, you sort of know there's a chance I could have a bad trip. There's a chance, obviously, something catastrophic and crazy could happen. I could jump out of a window or maybe I could just die. It was laced with fentanyl, something. Who knows? Yeah. You know, like, I mean, there's lots of real risk with that. But I think most of the time people like expect, okay, I'm going to go through this experience. It's probably going to be really wild. Like I'm going to see things or I'm going to have insights, and some of it might be really painful. Like, you know, ayahuasca, to me, ayahuasca is no fun. Ayahuasca is not a fun thing to experience, but I think it's also really important. And it's kind of like going through a bunch of therapy really, really fast. And not a lot of people would identify with it being like it's definitely not a party drug, you know, but there's still a lot of lessons that can be learned there. And birth would definitely fit within that category in my mind. Mm-hmm. So anyways, I just wanted to outline that. There's a couple of things there. So let's get into, and then also just back to the spiritual epidural. When you have, okay, most people are going to be a heterosexual couple of a woman and a man. And a man has certainly never given birth. And a man knows way less about birth than you do in most instances, okay? And those two people, a woman who's never given birth and then a man, are not the best people to go into this experience with without a lot of other support. And this is why I very much suggest a doula. Because here's the thing, you guys. And now at this point I haven't had a doula since the first one, but I still see their benefit. But I also know what to expect now. And like the other people in the room were so helpful for my husband to tell him, this is all fine and normal. No, this is good. This is fine. You're like, oh yeah. Oh, she's vomiting. It's fine. I mean, you vomited. That was so shitty. I'm so sorry that happened to you. Because it was so weird. We couldn't get it to stop no matter what. But
you do it at this point.
No, I'm sorry.
I didn't vomit with Food's birth though. That was a plus. I was so
And see, it's like, why did you not?
Someone told me they think it was the way Avia was positioned, that it was irritating my vagus nerve somehow.
Oh.
That it was like stimulating some sort of like vomit response of like her malposition was doing something. And I was like, oh, that could make sense because it felt really weird. And it was anytime I had a contraction that I would vomit, you know?
Yeah. And even in your early labor too, it was bad. Yeah. Okay. But so it's like, if we have people around us who are, and this is truly what I believe, it's like the Red Tent. If you guys have never read that book, it's so good. Mm-hmm. So good. Highly, highly suggest. And it's like, okay, we have, I think the way that humans adapted largely is with women around in the birthing space, probably not partners, actually. Mm-hmm. I do think it's important in modern day. And I think that it could have been integrated back then, but it just wasn't really the way. But I still think we need lots of women around. Mm-hmm. And it could just be one other, but like, and then, you know, a midwife, maybe a student midwife or assistant. But to have grounded, calm presence of people who've been there before you, I do think it's very important for these people to have given birth before, ideally, and really, or had lots of experience with watching it, to have that really embodied confidence in the body and in women and the way that this process goes. Because somebody who's not ever given birth, not to say that you can't be a doula who's never given birth, but you also should not argue with me that it's not different. Mm-hmm. And if you do, I beg to differ. Okay. Mm-hmm. Once you have your own child, you are going to tell me that your experience and your thoughts around birth are different now. Okay. Mm-hmm. Like you will. Doesn't mean that you can't do it. But my point is if these people have been in that scenario, they can really hold an energetic confidence in the room. They can be like a wise word of, you know, maybe offering words of affirmation, continuing to encourage her and the partner that everything's fine. This is a spiritual epidural. Does it take away the pain like an epidural? No. Mm-hmm. But do you get through it with a support where you feel not like you're panicking and freaking out anymore? Yes. Yes, I think you do. So and then you can transform these very intense sensations. I'm very open about this. I'm not somebody who's like, birth is orgasmic. It's just pressure. It's just pressure. Like, no, that's not how it is for me. And it's okay. And you guys, I don't have a high pain tolerance. I have a very normal pain tolerance. I'm not a wimp and a weenie. And I'm not like super tough as nails. I'm just very Joe Schmo normal. Okay. And in birth, I do have a hard time with the sensations and the feelings. And I just sort of lean back into this extremely deep confidence that I know I'm okay and I know I'm going to get through it. And eventually it's going to be over. And even if it's really hard to experience right now, this isn't the rest of my life. I don't have to stay in this purgatory hell experience. It will be over. It's short-lived and it's for a very high benefit. And I'm in it right now. And even, you know, during Sunday's birth, I was like, oh my God, I never want to do that again. It was really hard. There were certain times in that were the hardest of all my birth experiences, like certain moments, like individual 10-second windows of time that I was just like, I cannot do this anymore, you know? And I'm still here, like so excited to do it again because you know it's over. It's a finite thing. It doesn't just continue for the rest of your life. Okay. But that the spiritual epidural aspect of feeling very supported and calm and the effect that has on your subconscious, your mirror neurons matching the energy of the room and the lack of anxiety in the room is really, really important. And it's hard to have that in certain environments. This is kind of why sometimes I harp on hospitals because it can be difficult. But you can also go into a hospital room, turn the lights down, turn the thermostat up, put little candle lights everywhere, put on some soft music. Or if you can't like modulate all the physical around it, put some eye mask on yourself and don't look at anything. Just be in your body and put some earplugs in and don't talk to anybody. And if they're trying to talk to you, they can talk to the doula or your partner and then they can talk to you. And you can just be like sensory deprivation tank yourself within the room so that you're not experiencing the medical, the sterile, the anxious, the time, the masculine, inherently masculine energy that a hospital carries. No matter what, there is no way for a hospital to become feminine. We can put like a mask on it and say, okay, lights are low and everything's fine, but the beeping light is still in there in the corner. And there's still this contraction thing that's spitting out how deep you're, you know, like how fast your contractions are coming or whatever. It's like, just don't look, put a towel over it, turn it away. Don't look at it. We have to just stay here in our feminine place. Let her drive the bus. Let your birth goddess drive the bus. And she only comes around a couple times in your life. It's like, she's been waiting. She's been waiting and she can do it. You have to have confidence that she can do it. And if you don't, you got to address those fears. What are those fears in you that make you feel like, no, the birth goddess is going to crash. The birth goddess doesn't know the navigation path. Like where you have to do that. And if you have feelings when I'm talking about this and you're feeling like you're shaking your head or you're like, no, or whatever's going on, that is where you need to do a little bit of deeper work prior to your baby, your birth. Ideally, like, is it from past trauma? Is it from hearing stories your whole life? Is it because of the way that you were born? Is it because of the way a friend was had birth and it was scary? Or I don't know, something. We have to kind of go into that. So let's talk about trauma and tips too. But did you have something to say first?
I mean, I just think this is great. I'm literally writing down so many snippets. There's more snippets I've ever written down for an episode because I just think this is amazing. And it's so funny because, you know, we work in slightly different spaces and I see so many parallels with fertility and birth. It's just crazy. Which
it is.
You know, like I talk about this concept that I talk about called womanescence, which is it's like that inherent power. It is like that part, that birth goddess, that piece that comes in. And the creation of life is such, in my experience and opinion, a co-creation of some spiritual experience. And you're trying to spark life, you know, that's fertility. You're trying to get it sparked. And then, you know, maybe like that's how you build the bus. You have to like spark it. And then there's this birth part of the next transformation of bringing the baby into the world and earthside. And the practices are so similar. It's just eerie how similar it is and how crazy the world would be if we ruled it.
Yeah.
Like, just like the way that we talk about this stuff. Like, could you imagine if every girl, you know, as soon as she had trauma, would talk about it and would process it, and just how different everything would be. And I love it all. I think it's so great. And there's so many more parts and pieces than I think when people hear, oh, birth mindset, they're just going to think, what do I do the day of? I need to, like, you know, breathe and like get in. It's like, there's so much more than that. It's like, what do you inherently feel and believe? What is your identity around birth? You know, what is the identity of, okay, so I do a lot of identity work in my membership, and this just came to me. It's not only you and your identity, but it is what identity have you put on your birth goddess? And I think that's what you're talking about of, you know, so identities are just beliefs of what do I believe about myself that then becomes part of your identity. But with the birth goddess, just like you mentioned, culture and movies and how we inherently think, what stories people tell us, that you guys, if you have a bad birth story, stop telling pregnant women your fucking bad birth story. Or you're like, oh, my aunt so-and-so had whatever. Stop it. Stop it. Stop it. Stop it. The amount of horrible, horrible birth stories, most of them actually came from my mother, bless her heart. She's like, did you know my hair salon's girlfriend had blah, blah, blah. I'm like, stop it. Stop it. Like, this is insane, because you create an identity for your birth goddess. And if that identity is that she can't be trusted, bad things happen when she takes over, like, I don't believe her or whatever, like, whatever your identity is will impact things. And so the work that you can do, even before you even get pregnant, but once you're pregnant for sure, is doing the identity work. And if you want to learn how I do that, you know, obviously you can join my membership, but just doing identity work on the birth goddess herself. And I think that is so much of the trauma of who do you believe her to be, and how do you need to shift her identity so that you can actually trust her?
Okay, you know who my birth goddess is, who's driving my bus? I just have the strongest visual. I was an anthropology minor in college, and I remember learning about the Venus, the goddess Venus shape. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I'm talking about? With the like huge boobs. It's like this, like a rock. It's more than a rock.
You are more than a rock.
It's like a sculpture. It's like a very early primitive sculpture of a woman with these like huge breasts and this big belly and huge butt and thighs, you know, the Venus.
Yep. Yeah.
And she's this like ultimate feminine power. And it's like, I think of women like that. I truly do. Yeah. I think I don't, you know, this is my biggest insecurity, is that like my body hasn't really ever reflected that. Mm-hmm. And, except for when I'm pregnant, I do.
When you're
like pregnant, I have.
You're so like voluptuous. Yeah,
my boobs are the biggest they've ever been right now, and probably in all my pregnancies. I'm probably going to gain.
You have like really big birthing hips.
Yes, yes, I do when I'm like pregnant and stuff. But I mean, well, even when I'm like thinner, yeah, my bones are still you have definitely big hips. Shaped.
I've done a lot of dancing on the dance floor with you. You got some big booty hips.
Oh my gosh, you guys, my butt pregnant gets so wide. It's like, it's so, because I'm tall too, I feel like I'm just such a humongous person. And I love it. I really love it. I'm not trying to deprecatively talk about myself. It's because I feel really feminine. Like, yeah. I don't get to feel this way. Normally I'm very thin. It's just my metabolism. My brother and my mom are the same way. And it's like, we're just sort of thin, lithe, praying mantis people. And I didn't ever really go through like boob puberty, which makes no sense because every other woman in my family has like pretty big boobs, but not me. And it's like, okay, whatever. But anyway, the Venus, that's who's driving my bus. A combination between her and the Grandma Willow in Pocahontas. The Grandma Willow tree.
Okay, we're adding, this entire podcast is going to become some sort of animated series, and we've already created that character. It's going to be great. She's going to be the birth goddess driving the bus through the Amazon, and it's going to be great.
Exactly. Like, she's so grounded and calm and wise, like infinitely wise, like Gaia, Mother Earth, Pachamama, Grandma Willow, whatever, mixed with this like anthropological, you know, idea, concept of just women and what we've come from and this infinitesimal background of how, like, when you're giving birth, there's hundreds of thousands of women all around the world are also giving birth at the exact same time. And like, how can you tap into that like collective woman who's driving the bus? Mm. Remember that collective woman driving the bus, if you've put different makeup and hats and stuff on her and you've made her somebody she's not, that's on you. But that's not actually who she is. She actually is this very powerful, life force energy that continues to keep God, whatever you want to say, who continues life. Otherwise there would be nothing here. Okay. Yep. That is who it is. And it's the same thing for all animals and stuff too. It's spring now. It's like, there's ducks that are walking around together in pairs. There's baby quail. There's squirrels coming out of hibernation. And it's such an alive, beautiful time to just remember the death and the rebirth of life. Mm-hmm. And okay. Anyway, I do want to get to some like practical tips, and I know we're getting close to our time. So one thing that, I think everybody's afraid of, which makes sense. And so this is something to address that I think will take away from some aspect of the chance of trauma happening, is that when we are doing our preparation phase, we do need to have a moment to have the thought of, what if this birth does not go the way that I want it to go?
Yeah.
And doing this does not manifest it. You do not mm-hmm. bring it into your space. You're not doubting yourself and your birth goddess and who she is. You're not doing any of that. You're just being mm-hmm. practical, and you're saying, I'm going to walk through in a non-triggering way. And if it does trigger you, maybe you need to go very slowly, or maybe you need to have somebody help you with this to say, okay, what if I'm planning a home birth? What would happen if I got transferred to the mm-hmm. hospital? Okay. And then you kind of walk through that in your mind. Well, okay, so what if I get there and then they want to give me like an epidural or a Pitocin? Okay, so then what if I do that? Okay, how am I going to manage that? Oh, I know some different things about that. I know I can get in these different positions with an epidural to help the baby navigate. I know that my best thing would be to like get as much sleep too as possible. I know, da 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 da. Oh, okay, so maybe I need to go in for an induction. Maybe how can I do that in the most empowered, best way possible? What if I'm 40 hours into my induction and the baby starts to decelerate and they pull me in for emergency C-section? Okay. Then I know that as I'm being wheeled away into the OR, I'm going to have a little quick conversation with my baby in my head. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to say, you're being born right now. And I mm-hmm. cannot wait to meet you.
Maybe and your this birthday isn't how we, that's what
yeah,
I said.
Yeah, this isn't how your we wanted birthday. It to go, but you are coming right now. And I cannot wait to see your face. And I love you. And I'm going to take really slow, deep, calm breaths so that you get good mm-hmm. oxygen, because my breath is your breath. Remember that always. Breath during birth is not just for you to manage the pain. It's so that you have a very good oxygenation system between you and your baby, which is going to allow baby to manage everything properly, for your uterus, which is a giant muscle, which takes up a lot of oxygen, to get good oxygenation, to do what it needs, so that it also doesn't hurt as much. Do you guys know that the reason why when you get like a Charlie horse or a cramp in your calf or your foot, the reason why it hurts, the reason why there's pain there with just the simple action of a muscle contracting, is because it's contracting so hard, it's pushed all of the blood out of the muscle fibers and the capillaries and the space. And your body, when there's no blood there, goes, oh my God, pain signals. Wait, there's no oxygen, necrotic tissue on the way. If we don't mm-hmm. change this, something bad's going to happen. So your body, it's a signal to your body. It's like when you touch a hot stove, it hurts. Well, it's literally damaging your nerves, but also it hurts so that you pull your hand away. Yeah. It's your brain keeping you safe, right? So it's like when a cramp is happening, it's like, oh my God, move and get that to stop. Because if it continues for too long, that tissue is going to die. And then now we have dead muscle tissue inside of our body. We don't want it.
Okay.
You know, and this is where taking huge breaths is not going to take out all of the intensity of the pain of a contraction. But when we hold our breath, when we pant, when we don't exhale properly, and then we can't get a good inhale, it certainly makes it worse. Okay. Yeah. And this is also the fear, tension, pain cycle. When we have fear, we tense up. What does tensing up mean? It means you're contracting all your muscles, and then they're not getting good oxygen, and then you're not relaxed. And then a contraction comes, which is even more tension. And now there's even less oxygen, and now you have even more pain. I hope that that like makes sense. It's a cycle. Mm-hmm. If we can be like, relax, go limp around your tightening uterus, like completely relax everything, take really slow, calm breaths. And this is where it's mental, to take a slow, calm breath amongst such a powerful, intense sensation is so hard. And it's you against you in your brain. It's a battle of the wills. Who wins? Is it you being able to just control that breath and just go out, mm-hmm. out, 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 even though you're feeling all this intensity, this barrage of like insane feeling? And then, okay, slowly, I'm just going to go in, even though the impulse is to go, ah, ah, ooh, 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 ooh. you're trying to moan, but you're getting really high pitched. That's like the opposite of what they want. You want to be like, like you're so slack jaw, you're almost drooling. You know, your pelvic floor is so relaxed, you're almost peeing. You're just like completely limp around your uterus. That is what you want. So anyway, when we can go through though that experience of imagining different birth outcomes in all different ways, even though we're not manifesting it to be the way that our reality is going to be, we're not making that part of our birth plan, we're just having a simple meditative moment some point during our pregnancy where we're sitting there and we're giving dedicated time to consider and ponder, how would I manage these different scenarios? I don't want that to happen. It's not my plan A. I'm going to do this, you know, one time and I'm kind of think about it. If we can do that, when then, if things are happening in the birth that are less than ideal, we won't be as shocked. It won't be like the first time we've thought about it, that we've heard about it. And I think that can take away a lot of aspect of trauma. There is a huge aspect of birth trauma that comes from simple shock, surprise. They didn't even know that that could happen. They'd never heard of those things before. And they feel completely out of control and at the whim of what's happening. And it's scary and it's new and novel. Now, if we can take out the new and the novel and the surprise and the shock, and we just go, oh, that's not what I wanted to happen. And this is really scary because like maybe something bad's going to happen to my baby, but at least I'm not like learning about a concept in real time. Also, like, can we imagine that maybe it takes away like 20 or 30% of the overall trauma experience, or maybe even more, maybe it takes away 80% of the trauma experience. And so then what's happening to you when you had a retained placenta, you didn't even know that that was a thing. And now the doctor has their entire hand up your vagina and is ripping your, scraping the inside of your placenta, your uterus to get the placental chunks out to stop your postpartum hemorrhage. You're going, this totally sucks so bad. I did not want this to happen. And I knew that this was a thing. And so I'm not going, oh my God, what are you doing up there? What is happening? This feels like you're pulling my organs out. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it's huge.
Yeah. I love that. Oh, so good. Such wisdom.
Okay. So, and then I think, okay, during your pregnancy, what can we do? I have a lot of other ideas. Similarly, like you do that mental exercise of going through like less than ideal birth outcomes. One of our friends, Ilana Rumel, during her first blessing way, we were both there, right?
I think so.
For Aviva's? Yeah. Remember when she read out loud her birth plan to us?
Yeah.
Yeah. So she had written down into like great detail the way that her birth, that she wanted it to go. And in doing this, it's not delusional. You're not being ridiculous. You're just sort of trying to visualize and call in what you want. You don't have to write it down. You could just think about it in your head. But sometimes it's more concrete for thoughts to be physically written or typed out. I think that that can be really powerful. Is like, so she went by through the whole thing and she read it to us at her blessing way. Like, I wake up at this time. This is what's happening. My husband and I do this. It starts to go like this. I eat this. I rest. I do blah, 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 blah. And it like did the entire birth story. It was probably like 2 printer pages of length of story. You know, it was long. And in reading it to us too, she felt like, well, now, no matter what happens, at least I've almost sort of gotten to mentally experience this birth.
Yes.
Which is what I wanted to happen. And I don't know what's actually going to happen. But like a part of me feels like I got a little bit of satisfaction from just this exercise. Like that's so cool.
Yeah, it's so cool. And when we do things in our mind, it registers in the body just like it's real. I mean, athletes know this too. You run the race in your mind, everything fires. So the more that you can focus and visualize on that, then you can have that lived experience and then you surrender to whatever is then now for my highest good. Like maybe you can see it as I get to have this experience that I've lived in my mind that is exactly how I want it. And then now I'm going in for my soul curriculum lesson, right? Like what do you have to teach me in the actual birth? Is it that I get to have what I actually wanted in real life, or is it that I have something drastically different and that's a part of my soul's journey or lesson or my child's experience or journey, and I accept and surrender to whatever that is. I have had what I want and now I accept what is meant for me, you know?
Yeah. Yes. And that can be so powerful, especially if you do know for some reason you're not going to get the birth that you want. Maybe you like have to have a planned cesarean because of breech or previa or twins or I don't know, something. It can be really powerful for that, but it can even be more powerful for just like an average, completely uncomplicated, normally planned vaginal birth. Yeah. And just in general, when you're laying there at night and you're getting close to your birthing time, to visualize, like literally, as you just mentioned, with how athletes do, visualize having contractions, visualize where you're going to take them. You're going to be standing, you're moaning, you're swaying your hips, you're sitting on the ball, you're moaning, your horse slips, you're taking sips of water, you're laying on the bed, you're falling asleep. Like, really go into it and visualize the way that it can go. And do that, I mean, like every night as you're falling asleep for those last couple months or at least several weeks, I think it can be so, so huge. The other kind of practical tip I have, okay, like obviously, if you can meditate, if you're a meditator, even if you have 10, you set the timer for 10 minutes and your just focused goal is to work on breathing and clear your mind of thoughts. And when a thought does come up, you just like let it go, you release it like a balloon going up into the sky, and then you try to go back to like blank landscape again. Again, a thought's going to come up, you just release it. Like you're getting a little bit of mind mastery that can definitely help. But then also in addition, during your pregnancy, if there's anything that's going to be happening, like you have a dental cleaning, you have a wax planned for your pubic hair, your eyebrows, you have anything maybe that's uncomfortable, even if it's just like you've stubbed your toe or you have an uncomfortable bowel movement happening. If you can take those little micro experiences, which are not the same type of pain, I will tell you, it is not. That type of pain and all of those experiences that I just outlined for you is like survival pain that is different because it's your body trying to be like, ow, 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 get away from this, leave this stimuli. The stimuli hurts me, whatever it is. It's where we're really just like bundles of neurons, and it's the way that our brain keeps us alive. And labor pain is not like that. Sometimes there can be components of it with maybe if you had back labor or during the ring of fire, you know, whatever. But a typical contraction is not something that your body will not be able to handle. Like your body will not give you a sensation and a pain that it can't manage. Okay, we have to really believe that in our mind. So it's a little different. But if in when you stub your toe or you're having a painful bowel movement or you're at the dentist and you're kind of like anxious, you are taking these as opportunities to practice very slow, deep breaths, to practice completely releasing your body. You know how hard it is to release and relax everything in your body when you're getting your pubic hair sugared off?
Yes,
It's
I
so
do.
hard. It's so
I
hard.
don't do it anymore. I
I
can't.
know.
They're like, here we go for another rip. I'm like, oh my God, what am I doing to myself?
I know. It's been like 100 years and now I'm nervous because it's like so crazy down there that it's like
No.
it's gonna just be terrible. But you know, that is something that I think has cumulative benefit is so it's another tip I guess I have during your pregnancy is managing your mind because the part where this comes into your mind is do you have mind control to relax your body through something uncomfortable?
Yes.
That's what it is. That's what I mean by birth is mental. Do you have the mind control to relax and to breathe slowly and in a controlled way amongst intense physical experience and feeling? It's really, really hard to do. And when you do it, you get immense benefit, which is way less experience of intensity. And so you do get a positive feedback of like, oh, that one wasn't that bad. I want to do that again. And it's probably because I was so relaxed in all of my other muscles and I was breathing very slowly and calmly and I was not feeling fear. I feel very secure, very well cared for. My birth goddess is in charge of the bus. No one is in her way. Everybody is removing the obstacles if they come about. Maybe there aren't really any and that's great. Like, and there's just this deep belief in the system in that it inherently has to work and it has to work non-complicatedly in the vast majority of times. Otherwise, we would not be here. So, okay, that's all I have for you. I hope that that's helpful.
So
And
helpful.
welcome to school.
Yeah, I have like 25 moments of use this as a nice clip for a reel because it's so good.
Great.
This should be extra for just who you are as a person. There's so many good things that you said.
Oh, well,
So
thanks.
thank you,
Thanks,
Dr.
thanks.
Morgan. That was amazing.
Thanks, guys. Well, until next time. Are you pregnant or you're trying to conceive and you're looking for reliable natural health information about how to have a healthy pregnancy and also prepare for the future steps in motherhood to come, like the birth, the breastfeeding, and the postpartum? Because I have got you. So this is exactly the reason why I made the 6-week pregnancy call. And it's my most comprehensive resource. It's the thing that I absolutely love. I've poured my heart and soul into it. It's all of the things that I wish that every woman knew when they are entering motherhood. It's a pregnancy health course, birth prep series, breastfeeding 101 class, and a postpartum planning course all in one. And normally I run it as a class with live Q&A calls, but now it's available in a content-only format so that you can purchase it at any time and start learning immediately. It's called the lessons-only format, and it is just only all of the video lessons that you'll get access to for forever. So log on to milkmedicine.com/lessons-only or check out the link in the show notes.
In order for others to hear this information, please leave a review with Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and share with a friend who would benefit from this content. Please remember that the views and ideas from this podcast are for informational purposes only and are not intended to be a substitute for medical care of any kind, including the diagnosis and treatment of any disease. Consult with your provider before integrating any of this information into your own healthcare plan. A healthier future starts now, and it starts with you.